and welcome to So Farscape.
A Farscape fan cast by a fervent fan.
And a fresh-faced first-timer.
I'm Kaki.
And I'm Kay. And this is The Story, the story So Farscape.
The Story So Farscape is coming up. Here, how about we summarize it?
Yes.
John Crichton, an American astronaut who got shot through a wormhole to some distant part of the universe. Come on, you remember this
opening credits? Yes, of course. It's the opening sequence. We watch it every time. Now he's like stuck with
a living ship filled with strange alien life forms. Oh, there will come a day when you can recite it from memory as I can.
I'm sure I will. I've only seen it like 4 or 5 times now so far. So,
and he's being hunted by an insane military commander who just didn't come up at all.
At all. No, nothing. I mean, the whole enforcer thing didn't come up at all this episode.
So far.
Well, last
week. What do you have?
Yeah. Last week's encounter was a space alien. There was the ship was in distress. Moya was infected by the space aliens, basically, who were coming out of Chrysalis or going into Chrysalis or something along those lines.
Chrysalis.
Chrysalis.
I'm sure that there's a person out there, Mr. C. Alice.
Yes.
C. Alice has probably some other jokes made about his name than Chris Alice. No, please continue.
And they were boarded by some enforcer commandos. And I noticed that the episode was very much about Moya and the effect that it had on the heating systems and all that, and the effect that it had on the crew.
Whereas very good.
In this episode, Moya was almost like absent, really. I mean, she was lacking an important part, but even that was almost a MacGuffin to this whole story.
Yeah. So what you observed is very, very accurate, because this sort of rhythm of a planet episode and a ship episode and planet episode and ship episode is something that they were doing during the early production. And it was also like I told you about the pods that they worked in.
Yeah.
Where I think I said it incorrectly. Like the first and the third episode were done simultaneously, and the second and fourth episode were done sort of simultaneously.
So they were shooting, and also splitting up the crew so you can have a B crew. You have two crews filming, one on the ship and one on the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Because you also notice in the second episode and in the fourth episode. So the second episode was I think we called it Little House in the Perseus Arm with the radio telescope shack.
Mm-hmm.
The same people were on the planet, and the same people were on the
Moya,
with the exception of Rigel. I think
Rigel didn't go down to the planet, did he?
He did in this one.
Oh,
but in the previous
one.
you had Crichton and Eren and Dargo.
Right, and Zahn stays on the ship usually with Rigel.
And part of that is I know I'm probably like spoiling the magic a little bit, but like she is heavily made up, and that makeup does not tolerate moisture very well.
Oh, that could be. I was thinking it might also be very susceptible to scuffing and other things, especially when you've got action scenes on the planet that would be like tough on the makeup.
Exactly. Yeah. And it has to be repainted. Now, of course, Dargo, played by Anthony Simcoe, has that problem as well.
Right, but that's mostly prosthetics and not paint. Yeah.
And what a trooper that dude was to wear all that in. I mean, you could tell that it was Australian summer.
It was actually filmed in Australia?
This is Australia. Right?
Yeah, it's also it's production in Australia, hence like so many Australian actors.
I suppose it's also it's all the same thing. Like the Lord of the Rings was filmed in New Zealand because it's cheap, and well, of course, also what's his face?
Peter Jackson,
yes, he's from Australia.
He's a proud Kiwi.
He's a Kiwi. Yes, that's what I meant to say. I meant to say that.
Probably should have edited that out. So sorry, Mr. Jackson.
Well, so far, Scape.
This was a more innocent time. This was 1999 when this was being produced, and like, just imagine being these actors, right?
Yeah.
Because Erin, she's Australian.
Yeah.
Anthony Simcoe's American. Virginia Hayes, Australian. They're everyone except Crichton is from down under. I
think, right.
Like, the show wasn't airing in Australia yet.
No, of course not. No.
So, right, they were walking around in these costumes and shooting the show. And
nobody
had
any idea what it was all about.
Nope.
Yeah.
You're onto something, people. Prepare to starburst.
We start with a shot of a spaceship that I really kind of like. Like, it looks sort of like a bullet pod. So it's got a big engine at the back, and it's got these sort of landing skids.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird thing. It kind of looks like a cargo container which has been modified to fly.
Yes, yes, and I like that.
So the episode, it starts off a bit odd, I'd say. Like, if you look at the synopsis,
right,
and say the Tavlek come aboard for a fair trade negotiation,
yeah,
and I'm just like, okay, that's not the vibe that I got. Like, I mean, it almost immediately drops into the action. You know, there's a little bit of bickering about how Rigel is going to be playing up his role as the ruler of his empire or whatever it is with his 600 billion
subjects.
Yes, I believe that's the number he quotes several times.
I am dominar of over 600 billion subjects.
600 billion people. I have 600 billion subjects.
This is the ruler of over 600 billion subjects.
There was this suggestion that a lot of stuff had happened in the meantime, and a lot of stuff was just constantly happening, and that they'd now, while they're traveling through the uncharted territories, wandered to this planet where they'd been contracted with. I think it's like it goes very fast, but it is briefly mentioned that they're going to haul some cargo for the Tavlex.
Yes, it's that's the suggestion that they are going to,
and that's been negotiated by Rigel.
They're going to move transport or something, and it's like some talk about if it's illegal cargo, though, then we can charge more.
We can charge more!
Because they've never done this before, and like they're all coming at it from different directions. For Rigel, it's all about profit. For Dargo, it's about safety and security, and for Erin as well, kind of. But mostly, like, she just doesn't want to be captured.
I love how there's like a bit of movie magic done, because it kind of opens with a shot of Earbrows floating around in his chair,
and then that was so good.
And then they're setting up this pedestal to have him rest upon, which is just a good excuse for hiding the puppeteers underneath and not having to do expensive CGI with him flying around and being animated at the same time. And there's like this comes back several times during the episode, I've noticed, but I'll mention it when we get to those very points.
Very good eye. I had a pretty good eye here as well. I noticed that John is wearing a rather fetching like waistcoat here with a substantial collar. He has
That's his NASA jacket.
With the sleeves cut off. It was a full-on jacket last time around, and he's just torn the sleeves off of his jacket. Why would you do that, John?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe he scuffed through the elbows and he can't patch
them. It's your only jacket. All you have is, I mean, with arms like that, I'd show them off, certainly.
True.
Your garments were removed so that we could examine you.
Examine me?
So yeah, they're setting their dominar up on his throne, and I noticed how much they were interacting with him.
Mm.
Like he raises his little scepter and John pushes it down because this was the point where the
which is an interesting bit of foreshadowing.
Oh
yes,
yeah, the scepter does play a significant role, but it was also the actors discovering how to bring these puppets to life because they were working with Muppets which none of them had done before because it was a Jim Henson production, and like they were learning at this point, puppets come to life when you touch them.
Don't you dare touch me.
Hands on the puppet and then they're real.
Hands off, Luxon.
Push them, interact with them.
How dare you handle me this way?
Yeah, that's the advantage of puppets. You can actually touch them. It's like it's not like CGI, and it makes it so much easier to have those interactions and not have to like go through a lot of trouble to digitally add them into stuff
and,
that's going
and for
on.
You as well as an actor.
Yeah,
like touching something makes it real, makes you relate to it.
That makes sense.
Now on comes
the tadpoles. The tabloids.
Tablex.
Whatever. Tabloids.
As she corrects him very often. The cargo bay doors open and shit goes to shit. There's this cool like a snap zoom or snap rack effect where the camera motion is accelerated to zoom in on
and
Crichton
got
for drama.
A bit of punky music playing as basically the space orcs invade the ship.
That's a good one.
I mean,
they are sort of Mad Max space orcs.
They are they're wearing space marine armor with space marine cod pieces. And
I hadn't noticed the cod pieces.
Just like,
I didn't notice the chrome dome.
It was like, how does he see? But, you know, fair enough. Like, I guess
not well. So
clearly not, no.
That actor, looking at the helmet, there's two bullet holes.
Yeah.
I think that's where he's the actor could
probably
could
look
see.
Through. And he's got like this great Glaswegian smile.
Oh, yeah. Sort of stapled together.
Yes.
And these huge like shoulder pads, all of them in these earth tones. You know what they put me in mind of? Do you remember the duck aliens from the beginning of The Fifth Element?
Yes.
The Mondo Shiwa.
Mondo Shiwa. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Right? They've also got the sort of gold and the huge like shoulders.
Well, like I said, to me they sort of seemed a bit like orcs who had stolen some space marine armor from Warhammer 40K. You know, that's the big
space
thing.
Space orcs cosplaying Warhammer. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's basically what the thing. So they shoot their arm cannons. Zahn gets hit and like knocked down. They drag a bag over Rigel's head and kidnap him.
I demand someone hurt me!
It's a really cool
smash and grab
fight scene as well, because Aaron does this cool sort of dive and roll. They're all super athletic.
So I was wondering, it's like, I mean, I am noticing a little bit of a Worf effect going on for Dargo.
Ah, yes. Now, the Worf effect, you've explained to me before, is where you establish one character to be the strongest one on the ship, and then you have him being beaten up
by the alien of the week because
to establish them as a threat.
Yes, that they're stronger, because if they can beat up the bad guy, then
That's why Eddie Marks kicked your ass in the seventh grade.
Worf on Star Trek is the most beat-up character because someone has to show off that they are stronger than Worf.
Now, while that is certainly true, and Dargo does get his ass kicked a lot, he is on the same ship as Crichton.
Oh, don't me.
And Crichton gets his ass kicked
all the time.
Even, yes, totally, exactly. Totally. So that that is slightly subverted.
I mean, he is being a little bit rash, Dargo, here, by slapping that arm cannon on his hand. When they knock out one of the space orcs, this bracer comes off. And you can at this point, you can already see that there's needles in there and, like,
it's a menacing thing.
And he just, like, jams his arm into it and goes, like, all right, that's mine now, and I'm going to use that.
And he expects it to, like, fire those little yellow bolts of light.
Ka-tow, ka-tow, ka-tow. Little bolts of light.
Or in this case, blue, sparkly. But it doesn't work, and he's just enraged. Junk! Junk!
Junk!
Where's Rigel?
Junk!
Yes. That was a quote. And it was like, I mean, he does throw a bit of a temper tantrum at this point, and it's just like basically anger juice which is being pumped into their veins, I suppose.
It's so hard to tell with Dargo, though, isn't it?
True. I mean, he can be very quiet and pleasant.
Yes.
And then occasionally he just goes into being
he just overreacts.
Yes.
I mean, Zan did notice that, or did remark on that when she asked him how old he was, and he said 30 cycles. Ah, you were but a boy. Like,
yes,
for his species, he's
apparently
a kid.
He's young. Yeah.
Because she wouldn't just, like, relate another species' age to her own.
No, of course not. She knows.
You know, maybe it takes multiple centuries for Delvians to reach maturity, but she'd know about Luxans.
I mean, there is that knife when they reach that
certain age. And he still has it.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good question. Ooh, has he even used his Briss knife?
Interesting question.
I don't know. Sarcasm isn't really her thing. She doesn't use her insight to undermine people.
There was a lot of tetchiness going on between the various crew members in this episode, especially with the space orc later on. But that's...
That is correct. But he was being a brat, and she does not do well
No,
with
very
brats.
True.
She can... In order. So, the Tavleks have escaped, taking with them Rigel and leaving behind one of their own. And our crew are dusting themselves off, licking their wounds.
Yeah. Dargo throws a temper tantrum and he declares that he is now the commander of the ship.
The ship needs a leader and none of you have what it takes. From now on, I am in charge.
Everybody's going to do what he says.
Dargo, would you wait?
No, I'm giving the orders now.
Dargo, just listen.
They're all suspicious of it. They realize that he's got this gauntlet on and, like, what's it doing to you? But as they sort of Scooby-Doo up behind him, he turns around and with one strike smacks them all on their ass.
Yep.
He's not good at listening, is he?
And I noticed that there's, like, a lot of physical contact between Creighton and Aaron. Yes,
yeah.
There's a lot of... They're always snuggling up in the corridors to each other. And
they're always, like, totally casual about it, not noticing that they're just pressing their bodies together again, because that's what we as an audience want to see. We want to see the sexy shoving.
I suppose there's a little bit of sexual tension there.
Oh, a little? Oh, well, I hadn't noticed anything.
Actually, I mean, it's only...
heteronormative.
It is literally only in that, though. They're constantly bickering at each other's throats, but I didn't really feel
this
that
is
as any sexual tension.
Yeah. Oh, this is a 90s television program, and you've got a man and a woman constantly bickering at each other's throat, and they're super sexy, both of them.
Fair point.
And as Aaron gives chase, Dargo turns around, and now this piece of junk does work, and he fires another bolt of light at them.
She shoots him with her space stier, and he catches it on the shield that this thing can apparently also produce.
You are such a nerd, but you're right. Her peacekeeper rifle is this sort of
stier
spindly...
With extra bits bolted on.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. There's some more sexy shoving, Aaron and John retreat from an enraged Dargo, who goes to the bridge to order a pilot around.
Correction, pilot. Break orbit and take us away from this wretched planet.
Because he's planning on just, like, leaving Rigel behind.
Rigel brought this on himself. I say we leave him there.
Let Crichton finish.
Look, enough talk. We are leaving now.
Misty dips into her little pharmacy again and brings out the space smelling salts.
Chemistry yeah. set.
Well, she uses the smelling salts on the tadpole.
Tavlek,
sorry. And brings him out of his coma to wake him up and very kindly almost help him up.
Yeah, she's very considerate of him. She's protecting. I mean, she realizes that this is really just a kid.
Take it easy, child.
Child?
He's just like a youngster. He's maybe out on his first mission or something. Yeah. And,
Properly scarred and he's a proper staple head. But wow, that makeup was great.
And what you're saying, like reminding you of aliens from Fifth Element, they look a bit like the mercenaries from Fifth Element.
I know what you mean. Aknot and his crew, they've got the big mouths and the sort of sagging skin.
The other ones were a little bit more reptilian than these guys, but
they were like full helmets. But these, good one.
So Dargo learns from Pilot that a critical part of Moira is missing.
He asked if he could borrow a vital component of Moira's control circuitry, just for a while.
And you let him?
Certainly not. I flatly forbade it.
She can't, like, she's in a decaying orbit, which doesn't really come back in the rest of the episode, but, like, they can't leave. He wants to leave Rigel behind and is like, nope, sorry, we need this bit of control bejewelry that he used to pretty up his staff to make more of an impression on the... On the Tavleks.
You're right that the sort of peril that the ship is in doesn't come back, and I can sort of see that the writers probably felt like they were pulling from the same well quite a bit in the early episodes, like ship is in peril, like even the Enterprise D doesn't do it like
let's avoid
four
that.
Episodes
yeah,
in a
let's
row.
Avoid so, that a little bit.
But yeah, they still have to have a reason to go after Rigel because none of them like Rigel.
No, but
none of them would care except he happens to also have a piece of the ship that they need to survive.
The little hairball took it to decorate his scepter.
I'm going
to
kill him.
So in comes a conference call from the Tavlek commander. He like dials him on Zoom or something. And,
Chromedone, Bakesh.
Yes, Chromedone. That's a good name for him, yes. And basically he puts out an ultimatum.
We've got your king. You can buy him back.
Something, many tons, cargo bay of full of something or the other.
We want Corvidium, Purity 9, enough to fill your transport hangar.
Which should be easy if it's like has to be brought up by 600 billion subjects.
Yeah, because that's what Rigel boasted.
Told them, yeah, and
he's the dominar of the Hynerian Empire.
And they have one solar day to deliver it. So hang on, solar day. What solar day? Is like this planet's solar day?
We don't even know if this planet rotates.
Are we talking about one revolution of this particular planet?
Now we're getting into some of the terminology that I think the Babel bugs are taking care of. You notice that they used the word cycles before.
Right.
Instead of
which
years.
Is a year, yes.
Yes, I spent 3 cycles on a maximum labor planet.
And they've also, I think at this point, they've also used the word Arn.
If they're not here in an Arn, we go and look for them.
For our, roughly speaking. Actually, in the first episode, Aaron once called it an Arne.
I think I'll be searching for both of you in less than an Arne.
I caught that. Oh. It sounded so weird for me. Right. But so they do have these definitions that are like relatively absolute, like a minute.
Now, wait a minute.
Is about a minute. A microt is about a second.
Yeah.
Wait a microt.
Arn is about an hour. Like they just happen to sort of match. So yeah, I guess a solar day established by some... You know, the galactic mega statute sun.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Which happens to also have a 24-hour rotation, roughly.
Close enough. So, they go dipping back into Zahn's chemistry set.
Yes, my first chemistry set.
Make some sleep misty.
Wow. Okay, so the nickname's sticking, I see.
Well,
I thought, milking
it for as long as I can.
Maybe you'd grow... She milks herself at one point as well.
Ooh, wow.
It was this, and she makes this cool water balloon. It's this cool sort of squishy, like stress ball. Crichton is super enthusiastic about it, like water balloon.
Check it out. It's a water balloon. Excellent.
And to be fair, it seems to work fine. He throws it right at his feet.
Good
the
aim.
Vapor clouds rise
cloud,
up.
Yeah.
He starts to.
Dargo goes woozy.
And then the braces inject him with more of the go-go juice.
Gurgles.
It's a little more than cappuccino, pal. Our friend just tried to kill us.
Yeah, he gets a nice fresh bump of crushed up lunar regolith.
Yes. Ooh.
Deep cut. See if you get that one. Yeah. And he gets back up again. Yeah, I get knocked down. I get back up again. You're never going to keep me down. And they need to beat a hasty retreat because he is super, super violent.
Dargo's getting angrier. Do something.
Next up is John's plan, and his plan is very cunning. It's run away.
Run away, as always.
And then hide.
You hide very well.
And then shake the ship.
Yes, get the ship to suddenly accelerate and like sort of throw him off his feet and knock him into the bulkhead.
That was your plan.
Yeah.
Which Moya can't do because of the problems with the
control crystal or whatever it is.
Yeah, and then Pilot needed to vent this or that, and John said, no, don't. We're going to use that to shake the ship or whatever. He seems to suddenly know a lot about
how Moya works, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of... I mean, they kind of lost me there at this point with the technobabble. It was just a little bit like, whatever.
So having listened back to some of the director's commentary and interviews about it, like a lot of this came from... the scripts used to have a lot more technobabble. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how in the first episode we remarked that that John was doing the calculations for his atmospheric slingshot or whatever, and how does he know the mass of Moya?
Yeah.
Apparently in the original script, there was a lot of stuff there where he was trying to get that data. He was trying to get from Pilot, okay, right. Can you analyze my mass and how many me's are there in Moya?
Yes.
Right? How long does it take for light to travel between my heartbeats to try and figure out what distances are and metres and all that?
And then they just went
we'll
get it in the Babel bugs and...
we'll just assume that he's good at math.
The math is impeccable.
I mean, he is a scientist.
It's true.
For all his...
He doesn't act like it on screen, but yes, supposedly he is.
His plan works, the ship shakes, Dargo knocks his head real bad, and because these gauntlets, they have a sort of security system that when the wearer falls unconscious, it detaches so that, as they put it...
You can be disarmed without having to be disarmed.
I thought it was a very disarming argument.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, it's basically the same pun.
Yes, well, it's better if you can, hit it over the head 3 times than if you... it's like, keep beating that horse until it's well dead.
Yeah, oof. In the meantime, efforts have been made to try and retrieve the Tavlex and their bullet pod, where the Tavlex are transporting their kidnapped Hynerian, and John immediately, Star Trek, lock a tractor beam on them. And Pilot goes,
tractor beam? What's that?
Yes.
And a gravito ray, an inverted graviton polaron, and a tractor ray, whatever.
The docking dildo, I believe you called it.
Yes, to my regret.
You mean the docking whip?
Yeah, fine. Use it on the show.
Pilot is so helpful. Hey, what?
Yes.
You mean the docking whip? Yes.
It's out of range.
No way. No happening. So he immediately says, prepare the prowler. Which I believe is the name, I guess what they call their shuttles? It's like...
Oh, no, that's... yes, specifically her shuttle. That's the that's her fighter craft.
Oh, that's the thing that...
She's a prowler pilot.
Okay. That's what it's called. Yeah, I thought it was just the name for the shuttles, but that's... So that's
so they've got a few different craft. They've got the Farscape 1. Yeah. That's the one that that John brought. They've got transport pods, which I think we've briefly seen. They're Moya's own vehicles.
Yeah.
And Aaron brought her prowler, which is the Peacekeeper fighter. Kreis's brother also flew a prowler.
My brother's prowler...
And I noticed that there's a lot of... Kreis makes a lot of cultural references to, pop culture of around...
That's kind of 90s, his thing.
90s pop culture. Oh, he keeps doing that.
Close Encounters my ass.
Cut to the planet of the space orcs.
Yes, their Mad Max camp where a whole bunch of these... Space Orc and Warhammer cosplayers.
Yes.
They have a whole sort of camp, and there's lots of crates, and there's lots of netting.
Yeah, you can tell that they've raided the prop department to deck this out, and it's there's some bunkers and arches and stuff like that. And an inside scene, which is a bit of a dank, murky prison, where Rigel is buried up to his waist in the sand, which again I thought was a very clever movie magic trick to hide the puppeteers and not have have him out of his chair and just buried him in the sand.
Well, in mud.
In mud, right.
Yeah,
yes, right.
And you know how he feels about mud.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that part.
Yeah.
You want to know about mud? I know about mud.
He does not like mud.
But so he has company in his cell. Next to him is...
yes, through the alien confession curtain. It's
yes, that's right. They like the sort of torn, netted curtains hiding the different...
There is some, I don't know, tentacled beast, Cthulhu-esque kind of type
he's
critter.
It's called the four-throated cat point.
Yes, I noticed that as well, yeah. It's like, what?
I guess that's a reference to its voice modulation.
Okay.
My sleep cycle has been disturbed.
It's got red glowing eyes and a very high head, octopus type head with lots of tentacles and things.
Yeah, it's sort of kept in the shadows, but it's also like a pretty huge puppet.
Yes.
being worked and manipulated. It's called Jotheb.
Shock Jotheb.
Shock Jotheb. Yes, well. When we see his superpowers, their superpowers, I don't think that the gender is ever established. We'll have to figure out.
Yeah.
Next in line to inherit the Consortium of Trow.
How many followers do you have, or what is it? Like, he says 10,000.
How big is your,
how big is your empire or something? 10,000.
Only like, 10,000. I have 600 billion followers.
No, 10,000.
Planets, each averaging per planet 4 billion Trow.
It's like, oh. Yeah, they've got a bit of dick wagging contest against each other, yes.
Oh, just to be in the warm glow of all this testosterone.
It was at this point that I noticed like something particular about Jotheb's like language use. They use the passive voice a lot.
Yes.
Offense is not taken. It was unwanted by you.
And the imperfection
the
is yours.
The imperfection is yours, yes. Oh, I've never heard of you. The imperfection is yours.
Yes.
There's another bit of dick measuring happening on the ship, because Zan is meanwhile taking care of their prisoner, the little staple face.
Yeah, interesting bit of contrast there between how they treat prisoners on the different ships.
Right, because she's so compassionate.
Yes.
And he's like outright hostile and bristly.
I don't need a damn sermon.
But also super duper insecure.
It's not as if I ever had any choice.
Which she immediately recognizes, and she tries to tend to him.
I'm sure there was some tenting involved had he been wearing clothing at the time.
Yes, because he's wearing one of Moya's skin flakes, you know, the gold blankets, that they've got. And he tries to taunt her, like that she's a priest and that she's so prim. You bet you've never seen a man before.
Too prim to sneak a peek? You're afraid you might like what you saw?
And he, like, exposes himself. And she just takes a moment to just sort of, and just take it all in.
You're pretty big for a lad your age. It's like I'm
quite respectable for your age.
Is like that whole bit. Is nudity taboo in your culture?
Did you think you'd shock me? Are you ashamed of your bodies?
And he's got a good comeback.
Yeah, we would be if we looked like you.
Oh,
and
I doubt
she just like unhitches her gown. And like, oh, she has like a lovely bum on her, I will say that. It's like,
oof, look as good, we will not.
Oh, I mean, the fact that it's blue doesn't really bother me at this point. It's, very shapely rear end, I must say. No disrespect intended.
She is gorgeous and so comfortable. Yes. So you notice this throughout their interactions. They sort of fail to impress each other constantly. Like, he tries something on her and she easily sort of rebuffs it.
Yeah.
She tries something on him, like compassion. He rebuffs it as well. She tries like comprehension or sermoning.
There are always choices.
But I told you I don't need a sermon.
Like they're constantly like pushing each other back as they're dancing toward like being actually able to communicate.
And she gives him Crichton's uniform, to which he asks like, "What kind of fastening is this?" And I guess they don't have zippers on this planet of the space orcs.
No, certainly, because the next time we see him, he's in intense pain, which might be
It's like he's either suffering from withdrawal or he's got his willy stuck in the zipper because he hasn't figured that out yet. But I think it's withdrawal. But that was my first thought when I saw that scene.
That's certainly something that I suffer from when I get a little cocky stuck in.
Unfortunately, I've never had that happen in a very, very long time.
Ouch.
There's a bit of an argument between John and Crichton about whether they should go down to the planet to retrieve the piece of technology that they need from Rigel.
But they don't have really much of a choice.
That's what Aaron suggests. And John tries to be the voice of reason and caution. Like, we don't know how many are down there. We can't just go down there until eventually, like, she just sucker punches him with what she calls a pentac jab.
You hit me.
A pentac jab.
To which he's more susceptible than most, which is like a Vulcan nerve pinch. Like, it just knocks him out.
Like judo chop.
And then he wakes up in the prowler and continues his sentence where he was.
Exactly, like, where he left off, yes. That's a very interesting ability to have.
I mean, when you realize that you have that and you can do that to someone, wouldn't you do it like
all the time?
Yeah. Certainly.
I also like that how they are about like taking turns at plans. It's like, no, we tried your plan last, now we're trying my plan. And it's like,
it's literally, yeah. No, it's my turn.
This is my turn. My plan.
My turn to like make a plan.
Okay, well, it's really sweet that they're trying to work something out between them, and that's kind of not a great way to do it.
It's generally speaking not, no.
She's already got her plan in motion at this point, because even while she's in the Prowler, she's already doing the Warhammer cosplay.
Oh yes, she's already gotten the
got the space fishnets, and she's wearing her oculars. Did you notice that?
Yes, that was a very peculiar kind of vision enhancer thing. It looks like a Google HoloLens or something.
It's these little sort of glowing,
magnifies your vision,
which is enormously useful, I imagine, when you're flying in a spacecraft as a fighter.
I hadn't even thought of that yet. Yes, it would be tremendously,
to be able to snap zoom in and out, and just by wanting to, by thinking about it.
I mean, human vision is already very good at narrow focusing on a particular area. Which is why you always get those weird effects when you see something, you see an animal, and you want to take a picture of it. You take a picture of it, then there's like a tiny little speck.
Yeah, it's barely there.
And you'd swear that like it looked a lot closer when I was just looking at it myself. And
yes, I sort of imagine it like, do you know how they say that a hawk could like read a newspaper at a mile's distance?
Yeah.
Because they can, you know, they can fly a mile up in the air and see a little bunny rabbit or whatever.
Yeah.
As if they have such keen eyes that can scan all that. No, they've got a very, very good optical processor in their brain
and narrows down
cortex,
and they don't have the weird like human eyes which like went back to the water and then came back out of the water again.
They do have the same eyes, but they're just better. Hawk eyes, I think they use some kind of oil to improve the because it's what you're talking about is that our eyes evolved underwater, so that's why they're full of salt water, much like the rest of them, and then they don't work so well out of water, and they've adapted to improve a little bit, and now they're even worse underwater.
Yeah.
They're just kind of garbage eyes in general. Speaking of garbage eyes, have you paid attention to Dargo's eyes?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, because they go from being green to being blue a few times in the episode. I know, these are like little IMDb trivia things.
Yeah.
So he started out with green contact lenses, and you see them a lot in the opening credits.
Yeah.
He hated them.
Oh, okay.
And he had a little accident during this the filming of this episode, during the removal process of his makeup.
Yeah.
Accidentally, like some alcohol wind up in his eye.
Oh shit!
Burned the cornea a little bit. Yeah. He had to go to the hospital. Everything was fine, but then oh no, he couldn't wear contact lenses for 6 months. oh guys, I'm so sorry, but the doctor says I can't.
No contact lenses. Yeah.
Whoa, gigantic oops.
I mean, it could have also been like CGI, because I was wondering about, like, this is the planet of the blue plants, apparently. And I was wondering
that amazing?
If someone had been going around there painting all those plants blue, or if they had been, like, walking around with a spray can of blue paint and just, like...
It looks so good. Turns out, no. Like, I shared this with you, and I, when I saw it with the first time, for years and years, I thought that they were just painting plants blue, because why not? It's Australia, we've got plenty of plants. But no, like, in the commentary they talk about, this was all done in grading, the color grading. Process.
I mean, it makes sense, because like they're green, so you could just green screen them blue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they focused on specific tones of green, I noticed, because there were still some like green grasses.
No, absolutely. That's like the plants like had blue outer leaves, end leaves, basically. The darker greens were still green.
Yeah. And of course, nobody was wearing anything green.
Yes, that's the easy way to do it. So we have some space orcs who are supposedly hunting.
Hunting party. They've made a kill.
They bring down the prey.
Not clear what they've got there.
No, it's just like
there.
A bag of props or something. It's just like, it's very unclear what they're holding. And Erin, in her space orc suit, decides like, okay, this is now an emergency, and she uses the braces and gets herself injected with the go-go juice.
Our gauntlet is our food, our blood, our life. It makes us capable of anything.
Yeah, she's got all the armor on at this point, and she looks even more like the duck-billed aliens from...
Yes.
Like, except that she's...
This tiny-headed...
which she has. She's like a mini She-One.
Hmm. Oh, God.
Yes,
you're fired.
That was so fun. So she's gonna bust in with her gauntlet and all of her confidence.
She does a pretty good job.
Crichton is left behind with her pulse rival to provide cover, but he's never held one before, and he doesn't know
it's a very poorly designed rifle if you can blow it up that easily.
You think it was easy?
Like, you blew up the rifle? Like, well, all the blowing up was done by the rifle, so...
I imagine that maybe you would have a different relationship with Erin than John does.
Probably.
Your inability to put up with a sexy woman's bullshit.
I mean, yes.
May affect the kind of you'd have had.
She'd totally kick my ass, but, you know, that's a different matter entirely.
Pentakja! Back on the ship, Stapleface is suffering real bad from getting his willy stuck in the zipper.
Oh, yes.
and attacks Zan, trying to overpower her because she's just soft and weak. Like, he's squeezing her wrist until it bleeds.
Yeah,
and she just calmly, like, Aikido's him back.
Soft, yes. Weak, no.
Oh, that was a very good line. And then she turns up the empathy to 11 and smears a little love gel on her lips and kisses him, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's like
using her own wrist jizz. She's back there dripping some of her wrist jizz into her first chemistry set. Like, she makes a nice little lip gloss for herself and snowballs the piece into him, I guess.
Yes, that was a little bit, ooh. He seems very uncomfortable by the whole experience, even though it seems to have a soothing effect.
She takes his pain, like she did for Moya as well, with much less effort.
There's a lot less of him than there was of Moya.
Quite respectable for your age.
So I assume there was a lot less pain as well.
Back on the planet, like, there is... This is an episode all about bickering. So there are three arguments happening sort of simultaneously. One of them has been Rigel and whoever he's imprisoned with, or the people keeping him prisoner.
And you've mostly got the other prisoner.
Yes. Jotheb, the four-throated cat. Mm. Between Zan and her charge, and between John, Aaron, and Dargo, who just... This time it's Dargo and Aaron going at each other's throats, and you've got Daddy Crichton in the middle trying to pacify everyone.
Yes,
and
trying to get them to play along nicely.
Play nice while I'm gone.
Dargo is actually standing there trying to be all reasonable, which is like very unlike the way Dargo is normally. And I noticed in one of those shots that, like, he must have a serious beard care regimen, because it is silky smooth and like
so
perfectly well kept.
It's Lux and L'Oreal.
It's either that or his nose hairs have gone way out of whack. But it's...
maybe he's born with it.
Yes, maybe it's Luxerial. No, Luxerial.
Mm. It's luxurious.
Luxurious. Well, that's definitely true. Yeah.
They have another little bitch fight, and then John says, "No, look, you stay here, and I'll go take care of it." That seems to be his solution for whenever Dargo and Aaron are arguing.
Yeah.
Is accept neither plan and come up with a new one,
and just do his own thing.
Just like in the first episode when all three of them were like captured, and Mommy and Daddy were asking to be untied first. And says, "No, you untie me first, and then we'll
go on from that." Yes,
we get another scene, by the way, at this point. I don't know if you've noticed that there's been a few scenes in the episodes that are just like Aaron and Dargo talking.
Oh, yes.
Like up in a tree, as you said, B-I-T-C-H-I-N-G. Yes. And now here as well. So
they had an almost like kind little moment between each other, how they were like sympathizing with each other over like coming down from the go-go juice.
Up until they couldn't help but call each other like names stuck up and barbarian.
Fall back into their old ways and, I'm such a clumsy Luxon.
You know how clumsy we Luxons can be.
So these are what's called Euro scenes.
Uh-huh.
There is so much about the production of the first season that is just wild and gonzo. Like shooting in these blocks, they kind of gave up on that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But they had contracts to deliver episodes of different lengths to European markets.
Oh.
They were slightly longer because we have fewer commercials in
Europe. Right,
Europe.
So they had to make sure that there was enough material to fill the whole hour, basically, minus commercials. Yeah.
So you'd have some extra scenes, which are just like people talking about their feelings and filling out, like doing character development stuff.
Yeah,
that doesn't actually affect the plot, so you don't miss it. It's not there, but I'm really glad that we're watching the version that has it.
Oh, yeah. Be shame to miss out on those. So next we go back to the cell where Rigel is still working on an escape plan, this time with the help of Shoggoth.
Is he a great old one?
Well,
out of the great old ones, which one does he resemble the most, do you think?
Well,
so if we're doing
it's either going to be Cthulhu himself with like the cephalopod head and the tentacles.
Yeah.
Or yes, Yog-Sothoth. I can't remember which one that.
Yog-Sothoth.
Yeah, which one he looks like. I'm not sure which one.
Chub-Niggurath or Chub-Enwerath.
Yeah, they're all like too many. Very squamous and rugose.
Yeah. It does not go very well because Chrome Dome. Oh, I regret calling him that because his name is Bekesh and he's a cool villain.
He's pretty good, yeah.
He doesn't show up a lot, but he's like an experienced kidnapper and criminal. He's level-headed. He doesn't take shit. And he kills Rigel for trying to escape. Puts his
boot on his throat and like literally just like squeezes him until he stops moving. Which is where we learn that Rigel has teeth.
My grandma, what big teeth you have.
Because when he's lying there dead, his lips are pulled back and he's got these little yellow teeth.
Yeah, if you look at it sideways, like that critter from Lord of the Rings again, like the mouth of Sauron.
Oh, wow, yeah. Actually, there's a lot of Mouth of Sauron going on. Stapleface sort of reminded me of that one.
Yeah, with a Glasgow smile.
Glasgow smile, yeah, yeah. That's the one. Woof.
Yogg-Sothoth brings him back to life. And
yes, with one of his little tentacle farts.
Yes, a little wipe over the lips and like it brings him back. So more chemistry set.
Yeah, there's like a lot of kissing and bodily fluids in this exchange.
And they, he even promises that like his people will pay the ransom that is demanded for Rigel.
Yes,
and
because
he actually believes Rigel's bullshit.
Yeah. Now, time for the big rescue mission. We have our three capable heroes. They want to charge this Mad Max Warhammer cosplayer camp and retrieve Rigel, and in particular, like the Moya component that they need to escape.
Yeah.
But they lack a weapon. Now, Dargo pulls out his terrible, terrible sword that he's never used to any good effect.
Yes.
And Aaron is appropriately dismissive of it.
Oh, yes, a sword. Thank you. That'll be really helpful.
But it turns out this is Final Fantasy because it's a gun sword.
There's a little transformation scene which we don't see on scene.
Conveniently off screen.
Yes, and suddenly it becomes a rifle.
Well, is it charged?
It was when the peacekeepers took it from me.
How long ago was that?
8 cycles.
A, there's no indicator how much ammo it still has, and
yeah.
B, you haven't actually tested this or checked this during the time that you've had it back again.
I can understand that you probably don't have a gun range on Moya, but they have the Terrace.
You can, yeah, you can check it, plug in a USB adapter and see how much power it draws, you know? Yeah. I don't know how you charge that thing, but
ask Zan. She could probably figure it out.
Yeah, there's that.
I mean, the particle analyzer.
It's his weapon. I suppose he would know how to use it.
Yeah, at the very least, a charge indicator. Also, it didn't have, a reticule or anything. But it's kind of cool how sort of the halves of the blade move apart.
Mm.
And then there's sort of a lever bit. I can't imagine that it's very well balanced.
For a warrior, it seems a very unconventional weapon.
I mean, you can't hold it at the midpoint because that's sword, baby.
Supposedly sharp.
He's never cut anything with
it. He sharpens it in the end of the first episode, but it's
with
just
a dishcloth.
Right, yes. But it does make scrapey sounds.
Coming back to
no,
that
no, I know, I know.
It's his crusty dishcloth.
Yes. They just walk into the camp where all the space orcs are having their afternoon nap.
Yep.
And they find out that Yogg-Sothoth is the only one who's still in this prison cell.
Check out the critter.
Critter?
Critter? What's your problem? Find Rigel.
And
still
Rigel
talking in his passive voice.
Through my efforts, Rigel is believed to be valuable by Blackish.
Rigel has been taken away and they're taking him to the...
a more secure location.
Yes, more because he apparently is so valuable now.
This one didn't make a lot of sense to me because he's only valuable because Jotheb had agreed to
vouch
do the down payment.
Vouch for him, yes.
The fame of Dominar Rigel has spread even to my worlds. If the ransom is not paid by his people, it will be paid by mine.
So why suddenly is Rigel more valuable than Jotheb?
Who has already been announced that he'll be released in 2 days after his people have agreed to the payment.
So,
also, I'm kind of wondering about this. They show great competence at kidnapping people and holding them for ransom. So why are they leaving in this shithole? If they've clearly been able to hold rulers of vast empires ransom for money, and they're still living in this weird shitty
camp. Oh, is that a real question? Oh, yeah. Let me give it a shot. Okay, so let me see.
Maybe they have bigger space orcs that they have to give their lunch money to.
Oh, it's a bully verse, is it?
Well.
I mean, that kind of probably makes sense. It seems like a temporary encampment. There's a lot of netting, there's a lot of crates.
True.
Yeah, there's a bunker and the stuff dug out, but that could have already
been there, this is a good place for a camp.
Right, yeah. So probably they go from place to place, they encamp there.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that Rigel had never heard of the Consortium of Trow, and Jotheb had never heard of the Hynerian Empire.
The Hynerian Empire is not familiar to me.
Yeah? Well, I never heard of the Consortium of Trow.
The imperfection is yours.
But they must come from, vast distances away to literally not have heard of each other.
Yes.
And still be, mere, I don't know, weeks, months travel away.
Yes.
Space be weird.
Yes, space be large. So they go outside, run into some guards, at which point Aaron starts shooting with the sword rifle.
Oh, it looks so cool, those blue bolts. And she looks so competent with it as well.
She's really in her element. There's a little bit of a scuffle. They manage to get their way out. Tentacles gets shot in the back by one of the gauntlets on the way on the escape, which is when we get the scene with the bleeding.
More bodily fluids. Hooray! Yes. Just what we wanted.
Mm.
And they're also very interesting. So he doesn't have neck jizz the way that Zan has her wrist jizz that comes out of her. Aaron compliments him. This is a
fine weapon.
I request that you bury me with...
Yes, like drama queen.
He's such a drama queen. He, I mean, to be fair, he does fall over and nearly die.
Oh, damn.
So, true. You know, you gotta give him that. Because the problem is, the blood is dark.
Dark red, almost black.
And that is no good for a Luxon.
No.
Bleeding freely is the only thing that will help heal the Luxon. The wound isn't cleansed until the blood flows clear.
Storch!
And then
blood
they'll heal.
Toxicity or yeah, so, something.
So he gets punched in the kidneys a few more times.
She goes to town.
Like, and he's like, you pussy, you need to do it harder. She like judo chops him in the kidneys. And at which point there's another scene with Zahn and our little space tadpole. Yes, who is sulking over his dinner. Zahn being like, she's always incredibly kind to him. And even at this point, like when she gets summoned to the bridge.
Quickly, please.
I was like, I should put you back to your quarters. And he goes like, oh, I can find my way back.
Because he's so sleepy.
And she completely trusts. Yeah, and she completely trusts him and wanders off and leaves him there.
What a dope.
Yes, I'm just like.
And you're a prisoner, Zahn.
Yes.
You've been in prison for years. You're an escaped prisoner. Where is your paranoia?
You should know. She should know better than this. So this trust gets immediately betrayed. And he runs off to go find. Zahn's drug kit.
Yes, because he wants the good stuff.
He assaults a little scuttlebot in the meantime to get the injector from that poor little thing.
Yeah, now that's when you know someone's evil.
Yes, it's like kicking the dog. It's like, you know, assaulting the scuttlebot.
Cute little dudes.
You don't do that. That's just not right.
She easily overpowers him with more of her space Aikido, and this time she gives him some fucking attitude.
Yeah,
like she lets loose.
Oh. I could rip you apart. Right now, Colin, help me. I'd enjoy it.
Verbally slaps him down. It's like...
Yep, holds him from behind, pins him down, like shows the, I guess...
I'm not your enemy.
This is your enemy. Contemplate that in solitude.
Yeah, crushes the syringe.
Which I was like wondering, like, okay, so what was he just like going to inject himself with? Like... It's clearly not his go-go juice. It was just like some other random shit that he found in her chemistry set.
I guess it's just whatever can get him what he needs,
he
man.
Got the
like
shake
a
so bad,
stimulant.
Like I'll take anything: poppers, higher, screamers, downers, uppers, and yellers.
Yes. Yes, it's cake. It's a made-up drug,
and it's Bat County here.
Another deep cut.
Yes,
let us know if you recognize that one. We're at SoFarscape on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you if you get any. Of these extremely obscure references. Speaking of which, I have a note here that, like, she has this attitude of Edward James Olmos. How do I reach this kid?
Yes, that was fantastic.
There's more fighting down on the planet.
There is more fighting down on the planet.
Hunting down the party.
It's Creighton's turn to have a go at the bracelet, and he slaps it onto his arm, and he gets his first shot of the go-go juice. And I thought they played into something that I was thinking earlier in the episode. Like,
oh, yeah?
I'll bet that like it does nothing on humans, like it's like completely or it's
yes
like,
I was thinking that
you
as
won't
well
be affected of that, and that, at first that it's what it seems to be.
No, I don't feel anything. Well, I feel pretty good. Like,
feel real good.
Okay, it's working.
Oh, it's working. Yeah. Yeah, because Aaron and Darko are like super exhausted from their experience with the go-go juice.
Yeah, and I thought there was going to be a joke there that like apparently it does not affect humans at all, or it like it affects them in a totally different way. And but no, they played that one fairly straight.
Oh, that
straight.
Would be fun. It's sort of like the in the French comic Asterix and Obelix.
Oh, like the potion, the magic potion,
the druid potion that Obelix always wants but can never have
because he fell into it as a baby. Yes. Yeah. So, and we have another clever bit of puppetry magic when Creighton confronts Chrome Dome, who is carrying
a sack
full of Rigel.
Yes.
And it's just like, it's fantastic. They just like, they just cut in between shots of Rigel in the sack and just a sack of something wiggling.
Yes.
Being carried around and occasionally punched and or kicked.
Creighton, is that you? Get me out of here.
Shut up, Rigel.
There's a standoff between Creighton and Bekesh.
Yes, where they're doing a little bit of shooting, and this is where he actually catches one of those bolts.
That's right. This is where it happens and shows just how versatile these gauntlets are. During this standoff, like they radio to the ship because don't forget we've got one of your prisoners. And what I really liked here was like he has not shown any interest in the life of his subordinate, but now he's talking to him. Like, there is genuine care there. Like, he it's primarily to ask...
Tell me, are they wealthy? Have you seen any riches on board?
No. Because that's what Creighton says. We can't give you your ransom because he's full of shit.
He asks him, have you been treated well?
Have
they fed you? Yeah, well, it's not really food.
It's pathetic.
They have no riches, and all I have to eat's food cubes.
They're poor as shit up here, yep. And...
Are they forcing you to say that? Have they mistreated you in any way? You just say the word, and I'll retake their ship and slaughter the lot of them.
No, I'm fine. It's like, I'm not on any coercion or anything.
Wasn't that just...
Yeah.
Stunningly reasonable.
Yes, yeah, very
it
much
it surprises
so.
Bekesh as well, like, has been...
So long since anyone's told me the truth. I don't recognize
yes.
it anymore.
And I okay, so I've liked a lot about this episode, but I've been really impressed with how many like new sides we get to see of all of these characters, including Bekesh.
Mm.
He's a violent man, he's a brutal leader and he's a criminal and
yeah, sort of kidnapper and whatnot.
But he is also an intelligent man, and he cares, and he understands fairness as well when it's an option, which it often isn't for him.
And also realizes there's nothing to be gained here, and he's not vindicative or anything, and he's just like, okay, yeah, here, have him back, you know?
Take this royal pain out of my sight.
Okay, your guy for my guy. Here we go. Fair.
No, they didn't kill any of his people.
Yep.
Yeah, he remarks on that as well. Oh,
you didn't kill him.
Guess I'm not that kind of a guy.
That was probably more coincidental that Aaron didn't actually kill any yeah. of them while she was shooting at them. But yeah, so we have a little bit of puppetry with
yes.
Crichton carrying...
The Kermit carry.
Yes, on the arm.
And just the really important Kermit thing of just like making eye contact with him and
right.
like berating him and like rolling your eyes and spitting at it. It's so good.
Giving the puppeteer something to play off.
You're the mental patient if you expect anybody to believe that I'm...
Now, the puppeteers must have had such a hard job here because like there's three or four different people. No, there's more. Okay, so you've got one for each hand.
Yeah.
Right? A puppeteer for each of yeah. Rigel's hands. And then there's the head movement. There's the lips. Someone's got a joystick to make all the mouse
yeah,
movements.
Yeah. All the face, because can generally be done by one guy who's got like power gloves. And several of dudes do the
yeah.
ears and the eyes and the mouth. And it's like a finger dance for one person to do the face, basically.
Yeah, right? Like the gym hands. And I think they even have one person specifically for eyes, for the direction of his eyes.
Okay.
Right, because that has to be someone who can see the scene and can evaluate where the puppet's eyes should be looking.
I don't know how they did in this series, obviously, but in Labyrinth for Hoggle, they had the actress.
Wait, which one is Hoggle?
Hoggle is the dwarf type character, the one who helps kind of.
Oh, the sort of guide, like little
yes,
wrinkly Virgil.
That's the
yeah.
one. Yeah, and so there was the actress who was like doing the body acting. Who was just like wearing the costume, and then
she was like a little person.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Then there was the mask she was wearing, and that was completely animatronically controlled.
Oh wow! Yeah.
But I think one or two people as well, and then there was like the voice actor, like three or four people doing that one character.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm so impressed with this. I mean, because we just. This is so unique to Farscape, like the use of puppetry for these aliens, and like yeah, they're really alive.
It is done very well. It's like, I mean, you can't tell they're puppets, but they're not like obvious puppets. You don't see the control mechanisms.
Right. Like the first time that you see Rigel at the start of a scene, you think, oh, that's a cool looking puppet, and then by the end of the scene, it's like, oh, that's a cool looking asshole.
Yes. So
speaking of asshole.
Well, oh, ooh, God, yes. Actually, I have one other, before we get to there, I mean...
I'm sorry.
No, yes. true.
Okay, so we're going back to Muppet's Treasure Planet, which is what I'm dubbing this planet.
Oh, very good one. This episode, you mean.
Muppet's okay, Treasure no, Planet. Let's call it there, yeah.
So I think this is actually the first time we see Dargo in a different outfit. We see him in this...
Yes.
In his black jumpsuit.
He's got like a gi.
It's something like that.
It's rather, very fetching.
Rather than his burgundy men in tights outfit that he normally wears.
I like it. It's such a cool... It's weird how his regular clothes look way more like pajamas than this...
Than
like,
the pajamas that he's now wearing, yes.
Yeah, which are clearly supposed to be. He's still got his f*** me pumps on.
Yes.
Tell me he's got some pumps in the closet.
Aaron is waiting for Rigel, and like as Dargo comes in and basically to tell him to get a movement on.
That was worth it. Yeah. And they're listening to this royal pain, drop a pearl.
Yes.
which he says he washed. I don't know why Erin's so
squeamish about it.
Exactly. Like she's just had her hand covered in blood. There's one point where after she's smacked Dargo's wound enough, and he asks her like, "I'm going to be okay. I'm going to die." And she says, "You're going to die, but not today."
She shows
him his hand covered in pree. I guess.
Well, it's blood. It's just running clear now, which is a good thing, as we have discussed.
So for someone who's so comfortable with blood, what's a little like? Alien, poop. Alien poop, like,
I don't know.
Just wash your hands, you're a soldier, I guess.
And there's like this incredible smug look on Rigel's face, and it's like, he's such a bastard, he's such a bastard.
I am now, just now, thinking back to a moment where I did a photo shoot, a charity photo shoot for an otter sanctuary, with a little otter where people could have their... Oh, it was adorable. And people could have their picture taken with a little otter. And the otter was not into it. He fucking hated it.
Yeah.
And so between every portrait, we'd sort of clear the hotel room and let him just chill out and play on his blanket. And, and the handlers were there to let him sort of be at ease. And he was super comfortable. He was super adorable. And then he did a little poop. And it's the absolute worst thing you've ever smelled.
Oh, dear.
This is a little poop. And it just, poof, this huge room, this huge
cloud
suite.
Cloud of fish murk.
Just atrocious. So if that's the standard for aquatic creatures, then yeah, probably...
Well, we know he farts helium, so...
Which his loyal subjects claim is odorless.
Yes. It just makes your voice squeaky.
It makes no chemical sense, though, helium.
Helium is like odorless, I suppose.
It's inert,
it's a noble
as well.
Gas, yeah. So
it's inert.
You
so
probably wouldn't smell it, yeah.
No, but so you couldn't have it in your metabolism.
Oh, right, yes. I mean...
Because it isn't in
so.
Anything
no,
that
no,
you can
right,
eat and can't
right.
produce
Unless
it.
Unless they like eat rocks or something, and that's...
Oh, where it's been like squished.
But it's, okay. I mean, to be honest, like if helium changes the pitch of your voice, would it also change the pitch of your farts?
Yes, let
because,
me.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, it won't. So here's why helium changes the pitch of your voice. So it's thinner than air.
Yeah.
So sound travels faster.
Yeah.
Which means that while the frequency of a sound is the same, the wavelength is longer. So, I'm still, if we're breathing helium right now, I'm still making the same sounds, the same frequencies are coming out of my vocal cords. Mm-hmm. But it's not just my vocal cord, it has to go through my voice box, my esophagus, which is an amplifier for... sounds of four frequencies with a particular wavelength.
Yeah.
And now the regular, my pleasing baritone, all those waves are way too long to be amplified in my acoustic chamber.
Right.
So they're dampened. Whereas the much higher pitched, which are normally way too short to be amplified, they're now the right length. So if you do a wee fart, no, that's purely like
you think because the gas, the speed of the gas is higher, you'd like get a different frequency.
Wavelength.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no, okay, we've got to really get into this. So what you're imagining is when you do a little fart, that your whole bum is an acoustic chamber is that what you're imagining?
No.
Is that what you want to do to our podcast listeners right now?
I'm assuming this is going to end up on the cutting room floor.
No, everyone's going to wish. You brought this on us. You brought this evil.
Well, in that case, I think we should move on swiftly to the final scene where...
Which is a bit of a bummer.
Zahn is talking to the...
To Stapleface.
To Stapleface.
I don't think she ever got his name.
Where he's like proudly showing off that he's back on the go-go juice and that he's got his bracelet back on again and that he's like, now this is what I am meant to be. Now I am strong again. And she's massively disappointed.
Well, she did give him a choice and he made his choice. That's what he said.
My choice.
And she's disappointed, but no sermons.
No,
that's what people do when you give them choices.
Yeah,
they do whatever.
They make, the choice that you didn't want them to make, but still that.
And
that's their choice. And I mean, her disappointment clearly shows in this. So it does end on a little bit of a downer this episode.
But I thought that was quite. I mean, I think everything is good all the time. That's just the kind of person that I am. But genuinely, like, I'm comparing it to what we were used to at the time, which was like Star Trek, which would usually end on like a good lesson.
Everything's back to normal.
Yeah, the big red reset button.
No button. Then lever slide.
Everyone would learn a lesson and move on. And he didn't. He had this Stapleface had this liberating experience of someone really trying to reach him.
Yeah,
and she didn't,
and it just fell right on through. Yeah.
That's how it goes sometimes. And honestly, she's probably not the most wounded. Despite his smugness, I think Rigel, like, he really had to confront. I mean, in his own words,
I'm unloved, unwanted, unpopular.
And then he gets kicked.
Uncle
unconscious.
Yes. And apparently kicked out of by his jealous nephew 100 cycles ago or something like that.
100 cycles? So, yeah,
he's been out of the business for a little bit.
So,
was it 100 cycles? Yeah, I think it was 100.
Yeah. When his cousin Bishan rose up and deposed him. Which, I mean, he's bitter about that. But previously he did mention that his mother had all of his older brothers banished.
Mother always said I was the best looking. That's why she had my older brothers banished. She said my face belonged on the Imperial Seal.
It's one of those kind of dynasties where that's how you get ahead, by making sure that everybody else is off the clock.
I think that's most kinds of dynasties.
I suppose, eventually so, there is, yeah.
So what did you think about this episode, like episode number 4 of Farscape? Because you've seen
Throne for a Loss, yeah.
You've seen a few now, so how is this, like, what kind of expectations have you been building up, and how did this show sort of fit them?
Well, I think a lot of this was about character development, about establishing what the various characters are like, what they do. And a little bit of plot of the week. It's like, you know, we get Rigel kidnapped and we have to go get him.
I knew you wouldn't come back just for me.
Yeah, because the ship is in peril. I mean, that doesn't come up. But
no, that's exactly it. Like, it's mentioned, like, the whole, we need the crystal to get Moya back from this death spiral into the planet, which never gets mentioned again.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they probably would have left Rigel if it hadn't been for the crystal. I get that impression. It's like they would have gone like, yeah, fuck him.
Rigel brought this on himself. I say we leave him there.
I really don't think anyone could have made an argument for saving Rigel if that was going to cost them.
Against the odds and everything.
As I pointed out, he's a royal pain.
He is, very much so.
So I think of all the characters that gets developed, probably the most interesting in this case is Zan, because we really haven't learned much about her before. You remarked on that a few times yourself, that she just doesn't come up in your...
It's a little bit more of the same for her. It's like
Really?
Yeah, she's like always taking care of people. That seems to be her thing. And there's like another reference to her being the priest of this and that.
I'm Adelvian Pa'u, a priest to the ninth level.
It's kind of still unclear what those priests do exactly. I mean, by this point, I'm starting to get the impression that they are about guiding people into personal development, and they have, like...
She's a bit of a life coach, yeah.
She is, very much so, like, all the time, for everything. And like, she's got her, like, chemistry set to do her thing with, and she's a very sensual person, and which I also get the impression that it's part of her role as a priest.
Yeah, comfortable with nudity.
That
I mean,
too,
she's old.
Taking away pain, giving comfort.
Comparatively. But also, like, she bares her teeth. Like, she actually lets out some rage.
Is this the way you repay my help? How would you like your arm torn off?
That's in her. She's not faking that for
the kid's
benefit.
She just throws him around when need be. And, like, I mean, that's a tongue lashing that Dargo would be proud of.
Yeah. Oh, he used it on Eren in this
he
one.
He did, very cunningly. He just basically slaps her silly with it. And which even she begrudgingly admits that, that was a good one.
Yeah, like he gets her to like wrestle him to the ground, and then he can just tongue lash her.
Yeah, you forgot about that one, didn't you?
Yeah. And that's the story so far, Skate.
We'll see you next week with episode 105. Back and back and back and back and back and back to,
and back
to
and
the future.
It's like it's a mad, 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 mad world.
Yes.
Always one more back than you think there's going to be.
Where the crew come across a ship that is molecularly destabilizing. Dargo makes everybody bring it aboard when he discovers that there are Ilanics on board?
They must be related to Dentix.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Like a dental ship. And Crichton goes onto the escape pod and starts having visions of the future. First of himself and then of Moira's destruction.
Oh no! Looking forward to already. You can find us at SoFarscape on Twitter and Facebook, wherever you are, and SoFarscape.com. I'm Kaki.
And I'm Kay.
So Farscape, so good. Escape. I'm going to do it.